Now we turn to a performer who may be considered a little less harmonious. We caution you that some of what he says may not be something that you'd want children to hear. Many parts of Russell Brand's new book may make you laugh out loud. Others may make you want to throw his book against the wall. My Bookie Wook, as he calls it, is subtitled A Memoir of Sex, Drugs, and Stand-Up. Mr. Brand has been addicted to all. The first two so much you may wonder how he had the coherence to ever stand up for the third. Mr. Brand's book is by turns funny, shrewd, and self-assessing. It can also be, as addicts often are, selfish, ruthless, and hurtful. Russell Brand is one of Britain's best-known comedians, comic actors, and radio and TV hosts, and recipient of the Sun newspaper's Shagger of the Year Award 3 times. He's perhaps best known in the U.S. for his role as the caddish rocker in the film Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Russell Brand joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott, for a thorough introduction.
Notice how I just sort of glided over the title of that award and didn't stop to explain it for America.
It was nice that you didn't dwell on the Shagger of the Year Award, one of my proudest achievements.
The book opens in a treatment center for sexual addiction in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And you're there. Now, first, as you probably know, there are a lot of people that just, they don't believe that sex can be an addiction.
Yes, I can understand that, as it is a sort of a biological necessity for the continuation of our species. But I think one of the consequences of consumerism has been the commodification not only of commercial durables and consumer items, but also of our own emotions and desires. You know, food is not sold to us through necessity any longer, and sex isn't presented to us as a necessity, but more as a lifestyle. And I think the constant stimulation of these biological needs can lead to these sort of excessive compulsive behaviours.
It must be said that locking up a great comedian in a sex addiction treatment centre is almost an unfair source of material.
Yes, it certainly was invaluable, as a matter of fact.
Tell us about some of your fellow, what's the term I use, Mr. Brand?
Typically, they are called clients, which seems gleefully euphemistic in such an obviously clinical environment. There was an incredible cast of characters from all over the United States. Millionaire, playboy, prostitute addicts. There were severe and incessant onanists. And all manner of predilections and peculiar needs. It was a very unusual experience.
I think it's safe to say, after reading your book, you had an emotionally tough childhood in Essex.
Well, I don't know, really, because, I mean, like, you know, to describe my mother as doting is to underplay her adulation. She sort of adored me and is devoted to me. I'm an only child of a single mother. But she had quite bad health. She had cancer 3 times between when I was 7 and 17, and I had to just live with relatives. And I had a sort of an unusual and often strained relationship with my father, who I'd only sort of see sporadically. So, sort of, my childhood was tumultuous.
Well, your father and you went to football games, but also you went to prostitutes together.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I went to the Far East with my dad. My dad himself was fatherless and didn't necessarily know how to bring up a teenager. And, yeah, we did end up visiting sort of brothels and things like that. And I think that's just, in a way, his manner of communicating. And, of course, that's, you know, not a particularly healthy endeavour for a father and a son to pursue together. But, like, as a teenage boy, there's nothing you want more than women.
Well, maybe one thing. Could you tell us about the breakthrough, Bugsy Malone?
Oh, no, that was significant. I enjoyed that enormously. It was the first bit of performance that I ever did. And, yeah, it's, you know, it seared its way into me. I really, really enjoyed that. I was playing Fat Sam. I was tubby when I was a kid. I've got a kind of rather mawkish Judy Garland-style crazy affection for the stage as a result.
What did you feel?
Salvation.
Salvation.
Yeah, salvation. I thought there's a chance. You know, I thought, oh, right, life doesn't have to be just a maudlin trudge through misery and sort of a reflexive rejection, that it can be a right laugh. Being able to make people laugh, even idiomatically, imbues you with power. Make people laugh. Sense of humour sounds mystical. You sense where the humour is. It's a shamanic pursuit.
Let me raise this with you, because I was struck by, at some point in the book, you say that success on the stage and in comedy and even material success when your career began to take off wasn't enough to compensate for the, I think you used the phrase, interior sadness.
Hmm.
And then you say that's what made you turn to heroin. Some people wouldn't see the link. Some people turn to golf. Some people turn to religion.
I think what you say, Scott, is very important and interesting. I was once told by a swami that all forms of worship and devotion are the inappropriate substitute for the devotion we ought feel for God. And whether it's a love of a woman or a football team or a particular brand of candy, ultimately what we're craving is to be at one. Heroin, of course, objectifies need. Because when you don't get it, you need it. You get sick, your legs kick, your stomach turns over, you sweat in the night. So it's pretty clear what it is. It's not just a vague sense of, oh, I'd like to get new wallpaper, or wouldn't it be nice to have a cat or fellatio? You think, what I must have is heroin.
Do you find what you do harder post-addiction?
Initially, it is much harder because one feels enshrouded and comforted by substance abuse. But then you realise that it wasn't making you any better at what you did. It just makes you care less about being rubbish. And I recognise now the fear and anxiety before performance is just adrenaline and a natural incentive to be good.
Are you one of those people that counts every day of being sober?
One can only take their life, you know, a day at a time. And, you know, I don't count the days like I'm sat in Alcatraz with Charlton Heston and a pigeon, but like, you know, I am grateful for each dawn.
I think that was Burt Lancaster.
Fair enough, Burt Lancaster. No disrespect.
The Birdman of Alcatraz, right?
Yeah. That's the fella I was referring to.
Yeah, right. Do you like America?
I love it here, yeah.
What do you like about America?
I like the sense of pioneering that is maintained. I like this sense that you can achieve anything. I like that ultimately it's a country made up of people from all over the world, that there is not a conclusive national identity but just a series of different nations. You know, it's the dominant cultural force of colonized the world, if not in a military sense and then in a cultural sense. Still, even in these times of economic decline, New York remains the paragon of world cities.
How much of your time is now divided between stand-up and movies?
I do as much stand-up as I possibly can. I try and do a tour every 18 months or so. And then, like, you know, I think I do a movie or two a year now.
Do you find you need to get back to the contact with an audience?
Yeah, I do. I love it. I am a succubus upon that stage without performing. Yeah, I do feel kind of dry.
And how did you like writing a book?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's like you're just sat on your own. No one's clapping, no one's laughing. You've just got to be diligent and fastidious and churn out the words. I think my bookie book's got 90,000 words in it.
Yeah. But did you call people up and ask and read sections to them?
I wrote it with my mates, like they were there. I wrote it in Tuscany, and like some of my friends came out with me. My manager is like my best friend, and he was there, and I'd sort of go scurrying down the stairs and go, yeah, look at this bit, this is funny. And he'd go, well, actually, no, that's morally abhorrent is what that is. And I'd go, well, I'm keeping it in. It made me laugh.
Mm. And what answer do you give to people when they ask what makes something funny?
I think it's, you know, subjective. So I think anything can be funny. I think, you know, everything should be funny when you're in the right place spiritually and psychologically, that you can laugh about anything, as long as you're not trapped in the sort of prism of pain, in the solipsism of temporary agony, you can sort of laugh about anything.
Mr. Brand, awfully nice talking to you.
It's lovely talking to you as well, Scott. Thanks for having me, mate.
Russell Brand, his new book, My Bookie Wook, A Memoir of Sex, Drugs, and Stand-Up. You can read a chapter from Russell Brand's memoir or hear about the time he was locked out of his house, Starkers. Really a searing story on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.